Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, it's Monday night, and that means it's time for the Constitution Hour. I will be your host, Ron Golden, and of course, the Constitution Hour is being brought to you by the wonderful folks over at PatriotFamilies.com. That's PatriotFamilies.com. And, you know, we got a lot to talk about tonight, and I really want to get into some of the things that are going on in the financial markets and the banking industry, monetary policy, that kind of thing. But before I get into that, I want to take a moment to proselytize for my favorite media talk show host, Mike Church. And I know I've mentioned Mike Church's show to you guys before. And I'm telling you, if you don't have Sirius satellite radio, at least on your computer, you are really missing out. It's worth the fee, whatever it is, a month, just to have his show. The rest of them, you know, I could really care less about. I can hear Sean Hannity anytime I desire, which is not very often. Mark Levin and some of the others. But I got to tell you, Mike Church is the bomb. He gets it. He has a better grasp and understanding of our Constitution than anyone I've ever run across. He has undertaken a lot of productions explaining the Constitution, the constitutional process, how we got from A to B and how we got from B to where we are today, stuck in the middle with clowns to the left of us and jokers to the right, which is why I wanted to play that song. And I'm pretty certain that Mr. Church has a parody of that song on his website, although I've not been able to locate it just yet. Anyway, before I digress any further in my gushing promotion of Mr. Mike Church, and you can go to his website, mikechurch.com, and I would encourage you to do so. The guy is a practical, pragmatic constitutionalist, and he's not fooled. He is not fooled by the idiots that banter about all the different ideologies of our Constitution. And I just wanted to share with you on the program, before we start delving into some of the monetary issues, an exchange that took place on Mike's show where he had a constitutional law professor from Kentucky actually call into his show. And it's hilarious because the guy, being a professor and a constitutional professor and a constitutional law professor, he tried to circumvent the clear language of the Constitution and rationalize the system that is currently being operated, and Mr. Church shut him down in short order. So I want to read you just a little excerpt here, or the call. I'll probably read the whole thing. Mike Church says, "Mike in Kentucky, you're next on the Mike Church Show. Hello, caller Mike. Thank you for having me on. So here's the point. I was listening to Glenn Addison. It's great to see guys with a good heart wanting to run for the U.S. Senate. He is woefully unprepared to talk about the Constitution, and here's why. I teach judicial process and constitutional law. I understand different views of the Constitution, originalism, literalism, living constitutionalism. All this goes back to the notion that you're not going to find the words for each one of the federal departments in the Constitution because it's not that kind of document. That would be a civil code." Now, understand, when he put that little, "that would be a civil code," he's trying to prop up the idea that under the section of the Constitution where it says they're given the authority or granted the authority to pass all laws necessary and proper for carrying forth the duties that they have been placed under by the Constitution, and Church shuts him down immediately. "We live under the common law, and our founding fathers understood..." Mike Church interrupts. "No, no, no. You know what, Mike? No, no, no. I don't know where you learned constitutional law, but you ought to go back and read some James Madison." Madison was asked this question shortly after the Constitution went into effect, and he explicitly made it clear for anyone that wanted to know that common law was not the underpinning of the U.S. Constitution because it couldn't be. There was no way you could possibly write down the vastness of common law and have it apply. Common law was left where it is. It is left in the police powers and the courts that are in the states. The Constitution does not deal with common law. The Constitution is a plan of government. It explicitly, by definition, confers voluntarily some powers from the states to a general government for them to exercise. As the ratification statements in Pennsylvania, North Carolina, Virginia, and New Hampshire make very, very clear, as soon as the general monster begins to take any power that was not conferred to it, the people have an indubitable and feasible right to reserve those powers for themselves. I don't know where they teach constitutional law and common law at the same time as being one and the same, but my understanding, of course that comes from some guy named James Madison, is that the two are very, very separate. Caller Mike. Mike, I have read every one of the Federalist Papers. Mike Church. I didn't read the Federalist Papers. I read that in correspondence. There is writing on the document outside of the propaganda that is the Federalists. That's what it was, a series of newspaper editorials to influence the people in New York to ratify. Guess what? It had no effect. They didn't want to ratify after reading the Federalist Papers. Caller Mike. Mike, you're being somewhat selective. If I could just finish my argument. Mr. Church, go ahead, please. As you look at the Constitution itself, the way it's configured is exactly right. It's enumerated powers of the federal government. The remainder is reserved to the state. That's an appropriate interpretation. People that go beyond that simply don't understand the underpinning of our Constitution. However, the Constitution itself has language, which is broad and intentionally broad. That language, when married to the necessary and proper and supremacy clause, Mike Church interrupts again. No, no, no. Caller, let me finish. No, because you're poisoning the audience. No, if you really want to do tit for tat on the necessary and proper and supremacy clause, these were actually the points of this is what Patrick Henry referred to in the ratification convention in Virginia, which lasted for 4 weeks. This is what Henry referred to as the sweeping clause. He kept referring back to the sweeping clause. James Madison and Edmund Randolph and Mr. Nicholas and Edmund Pendleton and every Federalist alive, including John Marshall, stood up and said no. This is not a clause that can be used to carry the foregoing powers into use. That's all it means. You are taking the argument that the anti-federalists or Republicans made, and you are giving it life, while the people that advocated on the side of ratification said that was a bunch of BS. The Supremacy Clause, by the way, Professor, says, in laws made in pursuance thereof, it is only supreme in as much as a law has been constitutionally made through an enumerated power, and then it is supreme. Anything else is not supreme, and you can't sit there and claim because something was ubiquitously left out, therefore interpretation that it is, either you have a written constitution and it has certain things you must follow, or you don't. The reason we are in a pickle today is as soon as the damn ink on the document was dry, people began to do what you just did, just selectively say, yeah, but to bring that into power, of course, we have to create this agency and this national bank. It'll be okay. Yeah, it'll be okay. Your explanation, sir, is perfectly reasonable when you're in the company of people like Lawrence Tribe or Eric Foner, or other people that love to use the living, breathing, and it's subject to interpretation version of the U.S. Constitution. The fact of the matter is, the reason it was written down is so that people like you don't do what you just tried to do. It can't be done, or to make it more difficult for it to be done. Men, not being perfect, mischievous in our nature, what would be called construction to a founding father or a man of the founding generation, that's what you just engaged in construction. In other words, I want it to mean this because it's necessary and proper. My good friend Professor Kevin Gutzman puts it this way. I'll read it to you. I thought that was an awesome, awesome exchange. And it just floors me, you know, how well Mr. Church presents the factual precepts of our Constitution. And I see we have Jomer has joined us, and Kyra, welcome. And, of course, we have Miss Linda Sills and Mr. Rod Luke and Miss Yola in the room. So we want to welcome all of our guests that are in the chat room and all those that might be listening. And I believe we have Mr. Robert on the phone. Robert, is that you, sir?
That is me. How are you doing, Uncle Ron?
I'm doing quite well. And how about yourself?
I'm hanging in there.
Well, that's better than the alternative, I guess.
Well, the alternative is, right now, there basically is no art. I don't know about what it is. I'm sorry.
The alternative might be hanging out there, which could get you arrested, but...
Well, I thought I almost did after my 5-mile bike ride. I was going too fast.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, Mr. Ron. I mean, what's the alternative? I mean, like, this whole thing with Paul Ryan, you know, it's just like, it's like almost like a beauty contest going on now.
And, you know, right? I'm glad you brought up Mr. Ryan, because it certainly was my intention to kind of touch on that topic tonight, of course, and I touched on it a little bit last night. And, you know, I mean, give me, what's your take on Ryan? What do you think of him?
Well, I think he's got the right, he's the only one that drafted a plan to cut the budget, number one. Number two, he's the only one that has enough chutzpah to go up against the President of the United States. And number three, I kind of like the guy. So, I don't know. If I was going to pick, the only reason I would vote for Robert is because I would vote for Paul Ryan.
Wow. See, you know, and forgive me, but I'm going to take this opportunity to kind of beat you up a little bit, and it's not personal.
Oh, I'm always waiting for a blow from you.
Wow, that didn't sound right, especially in the realm of talking about hanging out there. But anyway, we won't go there.
I'm always teasing, hey, Uncle Ron.
Maybe you could swing by Barney Frank's office. He can help you out with that one.
Oh, God Almighty. Oh, that, ooh. Good old BF.
Well, and you know, Rod Luke makes a perfect argument here. And I don't disagree with you, Rod. If the choice is between Joe Biden and Paul Ryan, well, I don't like either one, but clearly I think that Paul Ryan is at least a better choice than Biden. It might be a baby step up a teeny tiny little itty bitty baby ladder, but it is a step up nonetheless, albeit not a whole lot. Sorry, Kyra, wasn't trying to get too far afield there.
The only reason I don't like Paul Ryan reminds me of my ex cardiologist who gave me an unnecessary catheterization.
Well, I think, you know, for me, for my taste, for me to vote for someone like Paul Ryan would be, I would say it would probably be tantamount to a Muslim attending a Catholic mass.
Oh, God Almighty. Ain't it awful?
You know, it's detestable to me. It's absolutely detestable. And the reason that I find it detestable is that, for one, we continue to backslide and redefine what it means to be a conservative. Now, some time ago, I had posted the definition of conservative on the Patriot Family's website, and there's several meanings. The meaning that I think is being applied today is meaning number four, if I remember correctly, which is tending to maintain the status quo or current conditions. Now, if you apply that meaning of conservative to Romney and Ryan, then I think you're batting 1,000. If, however, you consider yourself a conservative in its truest form, okay, then you have to understand that the first definition of conservative is tending towards original or traditional principles. I see that as tending towards the constitutional principles and the ideas that it was founded upon, i.e. that all men are created equal, that we have certain unalienable rights, and that government derives its just power from our consent only. Absent that consent, then it is not a just authority. So to me, that is the true, pure, or purest definition of conservative. And when we see the likes of Paul Ryan and Mitt Romney and John Boehner and Lindsey Graham and Joe Lieberman and a whole plethora of others being used in the same sentence as the word conservative, I kind of regurgitate a little bit in my mouth, and I have to spit because it makes me want to throw up. It's not that I think that Paul Ryan is an evil man. I don't know the man personally. I don't know his heart. But I do know his voting record. And I can assure you that from what I've seen, he hasn't found big government spending that he didn't like. But it plays well in the media to talk a good game. And one of the things that you mentioned, Robert, was that he put together a plan to balance the budget. And I guess, I suppose, if you call trimming spending by nips and tucks over 28 years balancing the budget, well, then, you know, I guess maybe he did put forth a plan to balance the budget. But as I understand it, Congress is supposed to present a budget every year. And so it would seem to me if we're going to balance the budget, we should be working within the framework of the budgetary time limit, which is 12 months, not 28 years, number one. Number two, Mr. Ryan did in fact vote in favor of the 2012 omnibus spending bill because they didn't have a damned budget that was $915 billion in addition to what they had already spent. And that doesn't take into account non-discretionary spending. He also voted in favor of the GM bailout. He also voted in favor of the creation of the Transportation Security Administration and Homeland Security. He voted in favor of the prescription drug Medicare D, which was a huge expansion of an already huge bureaucracy. He voted in favor of the No Child Left Behind. He voted in favor of TARP. He voted in favor of the Patriot Act. He voted in favor of the NDAA. So I got to ask my listeners, if you consider yourself to be conservative, what one of those items in his long and storied career would you consider to be conservative? Because I can't see a damn one. And there's nothing in that list that lends me to believe that he gives a damn about the Constitution or the unalienable rights that our government is supposed to recognize that we have. You cannot, I would posit that you cannot, ladies and gentlemen, believe in the idea of unalienable rights, that is, rights that cannot be signed away, and support something as atrocious as the Patriot Act or the NDAA. The two of those acts are at odds with the idea, the founding principles that I just iterated.
So, the Patriot families, we're not right-wing ideologists, are we? I mean that's what basically, the chief of staff for Obama, I can't remember his name. He just is so off the wall. Every time I look at him, I just want to just.
Well, and see this. Look, and let me tell you something. This is the problem. This is how far we have strayed away from the idea of our constitutional republic and our founding documents. We have strayed so far afield that to discuss the actual document and the factual words contained in that document is seen by both parties as being extremist, radical, right-wing, crazy.
Guess who I saw too on TV today? Your girlfriend, Schultz.
Oh,
I had the sound off, right? The hate in her eyes, the right. Hatefulness in her. Oh my God!
The thing that I've actually noticed with her, she has no answer. She has no answers for anything other than spewing Democratic talking points. Democrat talking points. All she can do is regurgitate what she's heard. It's crap. If the woman ever had an original thought in her brain, she'd probably seize up of a stroke right there on the spot. That or just burst into flames, some spontaneous. Maybe, that might be an explanation for the phenomenon known as spontaneous combustion. When progressive liberals have an actual original thought, they just spontaneously burst into flames because the friction in their brain can withstand. They just become fully involved.
They just have no concrete evidence to back up what he has done. I mean, Obama has.
Robert, hang on a minute. Now that's just not intellectually honest. Let's go back and look at the truth here. I mean, my God, they saved General Motors and Chrysler Corporation. They single-handedly saved the auto workers union. Right? They also
why is that, Ron? That's my main beef. They're trying to buy
their voter base. As if, you talk about pissing money away, and pardon my French, but I mean, that's preaching to the damn choir, right? Trying to buy the votes. And sooner or later, and I'm speculating it's going to be sooner, the unions are going to be pissed because they're going to recognize the fact that they've been sold out by their savior, Obama, and the Democratic Party.
And in the meantime, a guy like me is struggling and trying to make ends meet. this is professor that you have in the chat room. What's his name? Where does he hail from?
Oh, no, he wasn't in the chat room. I was just reading from an exchange from Mike Church's radio show, and the professor, or the alleged professor, and I say alleged, is from Kentucky, and Mr. Church, after the exchange, at the end, and it's the part that they're not showing here in the transcript, told him, I don't know where you got your education in constitutional law, but, hey, at least you got a diploma, and that'll come in handy if you ever run out of toilet paper.
I can relate to that.
I think he was implying that the young man didn't know shit and paid a lot of money for a worthless degree. which I think is probably accurate, judging from the statist BS that he was trying to espouse on the radio show. And, you know, on the topic that we were on about the Democrats and selling out the union, I was just reading an article earlier today that, lo and behold, the Democratic National Committee is pulling their business from Bank of America. They're closing their accounts. They're going to transfer all their accounts over to Amalgamated, which is, of course, a union-run bank cartel.
Oh,
They're trying to make amends to the union for selling them down the river with the GM bailout. And, you know, the only people that really are going to come out on the top in that deal are going to be the union itself, not the union workers, not the members of the union, but the higher-ups, because they own stock in the company. And when all this crap is finished transferring over to China, you know, they can get paid in yuan or renminbi, which will be worth more than the dollar very soon as things continue to decline.
Right. Well, that's coming soon.
And, you know, Kyra, if you need a new car, I would encourage you to go buy a Ford. They didn't take the bailout money. Now, there were some nasty hit pieces that tried to claim that Ford did take bailout money, which was BS. What Ford Motor Company and their upper management did was they foresaw the writing on the wall, and they secured special financing through the government, through the Federal Reserve, excuse me, not the government. They secured special rates. They didn't use taxpayer money to bail out their piss poor management style. I mean, what else can you call it but mismanagement of the company when General Motors and Chrysler, how many times do we have to bail Chrysler, bail their butts out of the fire? It's no different than the airline industries when they mismanage their companies. And then the taxpayer has to come in and bail them out, and all for the pleasure of standing in line to get groped and molested by the new TSA agents. It's insanity. It's absolutely insane. And, you know, we bail out the banking industry. Okay, so the taxpayers stuck with the bill, not the banks. Now, presumably, the banks are going to lend to the taxpayers who just lended them all the money, who just lent them the money through the government. It's absolute horse crap. It should never have been done. And I believe that the writing is on the wall and has been on the wall. And we're fast approaching a time when the defecation is going to collide with the rotary oscillator.
Hey, Ron.
That means the stuff's going to hit the fan. Yes.
I have a question for you. Why haven't we heard from Mr. Burr Bernanke lately? What's going on with that boy?
Well, you know, Robert Gallagher, it's funny you should mention that, because I was going to go for an article here. As I'm sure everyone is aware, or perhaps you're not aware, but over the last 12 months, our illustrious mosquito class, that's government, for all of those of you that aren't in the know yet, has been prompting our major banks to put in place contingency plans in case of a financial collapse. And Mr. Bernanke and Mr. Geithner, it seems, have been very busy little bees, and the Treasury and the Fed have just been a hive of activity of late. the Federal Reserve a few weeks ago, the Federal Reserve implemented a new policy for money market funds held by financial institutions. Pay attention, boys and girls. Per the new policy, money market funds, which, by the way, account for $2.7 trillion in deposits across the U.S., can now be frozen in the event of an emergency or financial panic. Now, that didn't come from His Highness El Doce, Double Deuce. No, that came right through the Fed. No congressional approval needed. So if you have money in a money market account and the Federal Reserve decides that, wow, the economy's really tanking and we're just going to freeze all these accounts, right at the very moment when you would most need to access your funds because of rising prices and the tanking dollar, well, you won't be able to do so, because the Fed has deemed they have the power to freeze your account.
So in other words, I should can my money market account from Wells Fargo and just move it into a credit union as soon as possible.
I don't know that I would put it in a credit union, Robert. I'm not going to give you financial advice and tell you to pull all your money, but I do know someone who will do that, and that was actually part of this article that I was just reading for. Many of you might remember Anne Barnhart. I'll give you a hint. She's the lady that did the YouTube video of her standing there with her pink AR-15 burning pages out of the Quran after she had used bacon as page markers for each of the pages. Yes, and that she did do a video on YouTube. What many people I don't think realized at that time is that Miss Barnhart is also the lady who used to run a large brokerage firm. And she was furious over the MF Global debacle. Or I'm not even going to call it a debacle, the theft of her money by John Corzine and MF Global. She was absolutely fuming, as were many others who had their what are supposed to be non-segregated or segregated funds raided by MF Global. She was pissed, as she rightfully should be. So too was Gerald Celente, who lost in the high six or seven figures, if I recall correctly. So the article starts out, former money manager Anne Barnhart, who in November of 2011 made the decision to cease operations of her brokerage firm and return funds. She closed up shop and gave all her clients their money back. The lady's got principle. I may not agree with her on everything, but at least she has principle and she has integrity. So anyway, she returned the funds to her customers, citing systemic problems within the entire financial industry, has issued a new warning about the stability of U.S. banks and the safety of individual deposit accounts. Now, the title of the article is Warning, Get Your Money Out. All legal bank deposit protections are now officially gone.
Wow.
The warning, stemming from a recent federal appeals court ruling surrounding customer funds lost during the 2007 collapse of Chicago futures broker Sentinel, indicates that individuals who lose deposited funds because a financial institution improperly manages that money, even if those funds are supposed to be, quote, segregated from other operations of the firm, are essentially left with no recourse if the firm goes belly up, according to the court. A misallocation of those customers' funds is not, on its own, sufficient to rule as a matter of law that Sentinel acted with actual intent to hinder, delay, or defraud its customers. So they didn't really mean to steal or lose all their customers' money, even though that customer had the full faith and assurance that his money was in a segregated account and would not be used by the firm for the purposes of the firm's own investments. Well, just because they lied to you and used your money and they lost it and now they've gone bankrupt, well, you know, that's really not grounds for you to sue them because they didn't mean to defraud you. It was an accident.
Yeah.
The implications of the ruling, according to Barnhart, will affect the monies of all private individuals who have seen their deposit accounts wiped out in the collapse of firms like John Corzine's MF Global and put all deposit account holders in the country at risk should their bank be faced with a financial windstorm or meltdown. Now, guys, understand that this, in light of everything else that's going on and that we're hearing in the financial markets, and that the federal government has been encouraging the big five, Goldman Sachs and J.P. Morgan Chase and Bank of America and AIG, to shore up their walls and have a plan in place because we're not going to be able to bail them out, that's striking. That should put some fear in the hearts of anyone that has any amount of capital in investments or in our banking institution. And
this is all, Ron, I'm sorry, but this is all due to TARP, the stimulus plan. That's a no-brainer.
Certainly it is. And I mean, if you want to follow the breadcrumb trail, the bailout plan and TARP is a direct consequence of the housing, the mortgage debacle, right? Which wasn't a debacle. It happened because we needed to do something back in 1996, 97, 98, and 99 to facilitate what we did, what we signed into law back in 1981, in UNIDO, the United Nations Industrialization Development Organization, had to have funding. And as part of the funding, we had to pass NAFTA and CAFTA. That was part of the, we'll all hold hands and sing kumbaya as we bask in the glory of world peace through the United Nations. And one of the ways that we're going to do that, folks, is we have to have free trade agreements. And if you want to substitute free trade agreement with, we want the major powers to be interdependent on third world nations and the United Nations for their subsistence, there's your free trade agreements. And in the 90s, when, by the way, Speaker Gingrich was the leader of the House of Representatives and we had the historical Republican conservative rah-rah, you know, cheerleader group in the Congress, and they balanced the budget and Bill Clinton proclaimed his surplus, okay, they needed to pass banking reform. And when I say they needed to pass banking reform, Miss Linda Sills is correct. when she mentions the Glass-Steagall Act had to be repealed. And the reason they had to repeal Glass-Steagall, among others, is that they had to bring banking institutions, which were outside of the control of the Federal Reserve System per se, that is, state banks. Okay, many states still have state banks, and state law dictates or governs much of their activity. Well, much of the state banking laws were not in agreement with international banking law. And so, in order to facilitate bringing state banking institutions in line with international banking laws, Congress undertook repealing some of the laws that were already on the books and writing some new ones in their place, which allowed the merger of banking institutions and investment institutions, which gave rise to the eventual boom that we had through the late 90s and early to mid 2000, which was the precipitator of all the mortgage crap. It was, you know, Las Vegas style bankers gone wild, you know, running around in bikini tops and having wet t-shirt contests and gambling on any damn thing that they could place a bet on. And
on the taxpayer's dollar.
Right. And, you know, then we come up to this idea that they're too big to fail. The reality is they did fail. Too big to fail simply means that we're not going to let them go down alone. We want to keep funding them with fictitious inflationary debt money until they've taken down the entire monetary system globally.
Wow. Yeah, after listening to that, there's nothing else to say. I mean, they did this. We didn't do. Did we build that?
Well, and here, yeah, exactly. And you know, the other side of that coin is they feign ignorance. Okay, because we only need to go back to the time of FDR to understand why Glass-Steagall was passed to begin with. Because the same behavior is what led us into the damned Great Depression. And that is what precipitated the passage of the Glass-Steagall Act to begin with. So it's not like they feign ignorance and say, oh my God, how could we possibly know that this would happen? Right? Because history teaches us that without these restrictions, this is what happens. And they well knew it. And we have Miss Linda Sills on the line. Linda, how are you, young lady?
Oh, fine, Mr. Ron, and hello, Robert. Good to hear your voice as well.
Hey, Miss Linda. Good to hear you too, Linda. How you feel?
Hanging in there.
I should say my second wife.
Oh, God, here we go. It's an inside joke, Robert.
Inside joke. Lord, what happened? What happened up there in India, huh?
It was just
Indiana.
It was a real private thing. No ceremony or anything.
Just remember when I did a party and slept, I said India instead of India.
I see, Robert, we have a very incorrigible radio host here today.
Oh, man.
So, he has a great sense of humor. Anyway, in the financial arena, I'm still learning because it's complex. I mean, it shouldn't be, but it is, and the idiots have made it that way on purpose, I'm sure. So I'm going to have to be doing a lot of studying on these other times of yesteryear. With FDR and the Depression and the banking, you know, and we know that the Federal Reserve is such a rogue, miserable organization, never should have been in the first place, and we can thank the banks from the, you know, Jekyll Island for doing what they did, because they were just hated competition. I know that was out of the mouth of Rockefeller and the old man and probably their whole family. It's disgusting what they've done to our country. I can't, you know, earlier I was saying that, because Rod asked me how I was, and I said I'm dealing with the heat wave we've got here, and then I did my grocery shopping, and I deposited my Social Security handout check today, and I just put the LOL. And I would much rather have a job than have to rely on the government. It's disgusting. They've got us in a box, and, you know, the unemployment rates are horrible. People don't understand, you know, simple facts when you have, they don't.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to laugh. When you said the unemployment rates, it reminded me of something Mike Church said he's going to have made into an Obama 2012 campaign sticker. Obama Biden 2012, because some people are still employed.
Yeah, it's just, that's fabulous. Oh, my God.
And you just have to laugh because it's the reality. I mean, it's sad, but it's true.
You know, I mean, it just, do people not have calculators? I mean, or any common sense left? This one lady who's, she's like stuck on the, I don't think she's going to vote for next time, which she did before. But, yeah, it's amazing. But I tried to explain to her that if you have a tiny, tiny unemployment rate, that anyone who's not in a wheelchair can have a damn job. She didn't want to hear that. She's got it in her head that, oh, no, because she's probably never experienced that kind of low rate. Neither have I, especially in Southern California. It's crazy. It's horrible.
Now, I want to spring another one on you that's probably going to make you just run into the bathroom with your hair on fire and start yanking it out.
Uh-oh.
Okay.
Do I need an air sick bag?
You're probably going to need one, I can almost assure you.
Okay.
I have had information that Geithner and Bernanke have been petitioning members of Congress for a new bailout.
Oh, yeah, I heard about that too.
But wait a minute.
I think I sent you that link. Yeah.
We're not talking about a bailout of the U.S. banking system.
No, this is the foreign bank.
Oh.
They're wanting to bail out the transatlantic banking system. In other words, the European banking system.
Yeah, I know that.
I heard that about 4 weeks ago. But I wasn't quite sure, but you confirmed it tonight.
You know what? I think that Geithner and Bernanke would look great in orange, don't you? Oh, God. I know where to put them, too. Gitmo. With no prayer rug. Well, they don't need him anyway.
I told you where Bernanke has all his monies. He has all his money for the annuities, just like me. Go figure.
He's probably got it in gold.
I'm serious. It's true. That's where he has it. He has all of his monies in annuities. You know?
I bet.
I'm telling you, Mr. Ron, well, probably he has his Swiss banks too, like the rest of them do. You know?
Right.
They're investing in the yuan. They're investing in China Motors.
But you know, but after listening to all this stuff these past 2 days, after listening about it, now I know what the quote means. No taxation without representation means. You know, really. Now I can interpret it, because these bastards don't pay their taxes and they're representing us. Yeah, Spotify.
Well, they're not representing us. They're representing their own selves.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, when's the last time you feel that you actually had true representation in Congress or in government? My God.
Not in my lifetime.
The only representation you're getting in Congress is Congress salivates every time they see you because they see you as steak on the hoof, brother.
Yeah, an ATM machine. Yeah.
I mean, you absolutely. They see the American taxpayers, and that's why Church, you know, coined that clever slogan, you know, Obama 2012, because there are still people that are employed. It's kind of like the old joke of, you know, I can't be out of money. I still have checks left.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
My last resort, if I don't go back to graduate school, my last resort is becoming a stand-up comic and call it the day.
Yeah.
That's my last resort. I could have heard it. I could just bash the politicians, have a good time with it.
Now, Robert, what you could do is find somebody that's really tall, like 6'8", and the two of you could get together and do like a ventriloquist routine. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah.
Oh, you're a real, you know what?
Nothing but love, Robert.
I want to tell you what Leonie tells me. I want to tell you what my best Leonie told me. I'm going to whip you behind.
And then she picks you up by the feet and paddles you, right?
That's it. I will whip you behind. That's her motto.
So, Ron, have you studied any of this Ryan plan in any depth? I have not looked at it, so.
I really haven't. I mean, I've heard tidbits here and there.
Yeah.
I've heard Ron Paul speak on it. I know he's read through it, and I'm not going to waste my time on reading through something that expands government spending.
Right.
Okay.
Exactly.
And passes itself off as a plan to balance the budget.
Well, when we're talking about balancing budgets, is it not Harry Reid is putting the kibosh on anyone taking votes in the Senate on any of this stuff?
Oh, absolutely. And Reid has also vowed to kill the audit the Fed bill, which, I informed you guys some time ago that forget about it because it's DOA in the Senate. And we saw what happened last time. It had 325 co-sponsors out of 435 members. Now, you gotta help me out with this one. That sounds to me like a major majority, 325 co-sponsors, including the sponsor of the bill, all signed on out of 435 members. And what came of it was about three lines in the Dodd-Frank bill.
Oh, my God.
Which, by the way, resulted in us being informed that $16.3 trillion went to foreign banks.
Yes, I know.
So, I mean, even as watered down as it was, it did result in some revelations.
Unbelievable what they're doing. And they keep doing it because they're there.
So what are we going to bail out Greece now?
Who knows? Greece is on the brink. California's on the brink. Our country's on the brink. Nobody cares. Now, there was, about a year or two ago, I think his name is the Connie Mack guy. He had the Mack Penny plan, which made a lot of sense, and it didn't go anywhere because we didn't have anybody, even in the House at the time, that would, sponsor it. And then, of course, the Senate has been always derails everything that's good. But it sounded even better than the Ryan plan, from what I understood.
Well, and that what I remember of the plan that I believe you're talking about is that for I think that was for every
right.
dollar of federal spending, they had to cut one penny somewhere else.
That's right. And I tell you why you're right, Ron. It's because that's what I met Frank at the Kane Barber dinner.
Right.
And Connie Mack was explaining his plan on the video, right? You know, and I was listening diligently all through the whole thing, you know. And then when he brought up the word, this is a, quote, progressive plan, that just really just,
well,
before I even started coming on the show.
Let's put it in perspective that maybe, you know, members of the audience would be able to relate to more directly. Under that plan, if a family is bringing in $60,000 a year,
correct,
they agree to cut $600 out of their budget.
That's right. That's how progressive it is.
That is pathetic.
That's my point.
Right.
That's my whole point.
The only person I have heard propose anything even remotely approaching a serious plan was Dr. Ron Paul. He proposed to cut $1 trillion in federal spending in the first year.
Right.
And quite honestly, I mean, $1 trillion is an astronomical sum that we can't possibly wrap our minds around.
Right.
How much money that really is. And yet, in terms of the federal budget, it is a drop in the proverbial bucket.
Mm-hmm.
And it does not, and Dr. Paul admits, it does not balance the budget the first year. Why not? Well, because we have a $1.6 trillion budget deficit. That means that Congress overspent what they had appropriated by $1.6 trillion. So cutting $1 trillion means they're only going to be overspending the following year,
right,
$600 billion. Okay?
So then it has to continue. It would have to
and
continue.
And he is called a lunatic, radical, right-wing, extremist. Oh, my God. The earth would stop rotating on its axis. A red dragon would appear in the sky and swoop up the stars with its tail and fling them to the earth, and it would be the end.
Oh, I know. I mean, can you imagine the bread and circuses we're going to get and the theater we're going to get with the next few debates and all the rest of it? I mean, it's just the vitriol is going to be beyond.
I've got a prediction that this election campaign, this cycle, this 2012 election, is going to take the collective IQ of the entire nation and reduce it by at least 40%.
Oh yeah.
I think we are so fast approaching the level of Idiocracy, the movie. I mean, honest to God, we're I think past the tipping point. I've said it before. I think we've crossed Rubicon, and the only way that it's going to get back to any semblance of reality is, by God, every one of us is going to have to be intimately involved and very forceful in not compromising.
Right.
We have compromised our way into servitude.
Oblivion. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And it has to be, you know, at the county level, the state level. people.
Sure.
We've got to be absolutely tyrannical and fanatical in pursuit if we want to have any hope prevailing.
Yeah.
Because to do nothing or to continue on the path and be vocal, you know, it's not getting us anywhere. I will say that I think that Ron Paul has done more for the idea of the Patriot movement, our Constitution, the founding principles that are iterated in our Declaration of Independence. He has done more to bring that to casual conversation at the dinner table across this country than any other single individual since the founding fathers.
I think you're right.
I mean,
yes, because what's going on is so self-destructive. I mean, we are collective heroin addicts with this insanity, and it's got to stop. And
you're right. And I think that, you know, it's so unfortunate that so many of the folks out there that are involved in, like, the Tea Party, they're only just now beginning to wake up to the reality that Dr. Paul's not the raving lunatic crazy Uncle Fester that, you know, the two supposed left-right paradigm parties would have you believe that he is. And
right.
I unfortunately believe that there is a majority within the Tea Party itself that will never wake up to that realization, because at heart they are dyed-in-the-wool neocons. They don't know it. They wouldn't admit it. But they are.
So when the tsunami hits, they're going to be blindsided and they're not going to know what hit them.
Yes. And those are the people, those are the people that I believe are going to be the disillusioned ones that perhaps the good retired colonel was talking about in his scenario 2016.
Okay.
Those are the people that are going to become so disillusioned with the party that they thought they held so dear. When the true austerity measures begin to hit home,
right,
as the financial climate changes dramatically, they're going to be calling for blood.
Oh, yeah. And that's not always a good thing. I mean, God knows where this is going to lead, you know. But if you historically look at it, and if you look at it through the lens of a Friedman or a von Mises or any of these great people, it's going to be a mess. I mean, there's no, you can't stop if they don't, or if they're not stopped, like the Bernankes and the Geithners and the Il Duce and the rest of them and the Harry Reid and everybody else involved who are, or who are definitely in on it. This is, you know, right, left, be damned. It's going to go the way of Greece. There's no other way around it. It's impossible. It's like, you know, trying to stand into a bucket and pull yourself up by the handle. It's stupid. And people that can't see that, I don't know. I mean, so, have you ever seen that commercial? I think it's DiGiorno, and the guy says, I've got the, what is it called? Something super publicity or whatever. And he says, I can get two pizzas for the price of one. And the guy goes, dude, I think you just doubled my IQ. Somebody needs to send somebody some pizzas. Wow. You know?
Right. Well, you know, and that, Lynn, make a great point, because if you look at the advertising and things that are on television, and I just simply don't watch television, it's pretty rare. But nonetheless, if you've ever seen the movie Idiocracy, that sums it up. You know, I love, again, Mike Church. he plays a clip on his show constantly that's from the movie Idiocracy. And in the movie, you know, it's 500 years in the future, and this average guy of low to average IQ is in a military experiment, and he gets frozen in time, and, you know, it's 500 years in the future, and everyone is dumb as a box of hair. because all the inbreeding and only the redneck idiots could reproduce. And so exactly. It's got electrolytes. The crops are dying. The plants are failing. And the reason they're failing is because the only thing they use to water the plants is Brondo, which is basically Gatorade, right? Because it's got electrolytes. And they don't understand that electrolytes are salts, and salts kill plants, right? But even the smartest guy in the world, the military guy, he doesn't know what the hell electrolytes are. But he's pretty sure they're not good for the plants because you're watering them with it and they're dying. And he says, why do you even put it on plants? And the guy says, because Brondo's got what plants crave. And he said, what is that? And they said, electrolytes. And he's like, what are electrolytes? Do you even know? It's what plants crave. Well, it's what everybody craves, because it's the only thing they drink other than booze is Brondo. And, I mean, everybody's just dumb as crap. And unfortunately, I think that's closer to the reality in this country than we'd like to admit.
Yeah, that's what's so frightening. And yeah, I mean, it's becoming clear if you go out in public and try to talk to anyone that's even left-leaning at all or who doesn't get it, who thinks they're on the right, it's very frightening, absolutely. And I believe me, I'll be, next time we have an action meeting, I'll be surrounded. I'll be that guy that sang the song today, stuck in the middle.
And I think it's Mike, right, from the hot seat left is never
yes.
right?
Yeah.
Mike is in the chat room, so kudos,
hey.
Mike. And I did get over to reclamationprojectx.org and sign the petition. And I guess, you know, he kind of came in at the tail end and heard me talking about 2016. And what I was referring to was an article written by a retired lieutenant colonel who was teaching at the Army War College and is currently a professor or an instructor at the University of Kansas at Leavenworth, who wrote a paper in which a fictitious scenario in which during the 2012 election, we have a big sea change. And the radical right-wing, you know, extremist Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan are elected. And the other radical extremist conservative, you know, Republican types get a majority in Congress and the Senate. And gosh, wouldn't you know it, the doggone economy just goes into a tailspin. And gee whiz, you know, people start getting antsy and they start getting pissed off and they point the finger at the extremist radical right-wing Republicans. And
yep.
And the Tea Party lines up and gets in bed with Al-Qaeda types and becomes terrorists. And they take over the city of Darlington. And the government has to send in, you know, bombing runs and drones and all kinds of great stuff. It's not terribly far-fetched hyperbole, but, you know, it is something that I spoke about on this show well over a year ago, that my fear was that, you know, of course, the
mm-hmm.
mosquito class loves to play the whole left-right paradigm thing, and so they love to pit, you know, the left against the right kind of false
mm-hmm.
Argument, this diaprax, this dialectic, this Hegelian crap that they, just like you were talking about your Delphi'd being Delphi'd, you know, they're trying to Delphi the entire damn nation with this stupid garbage.
I know.
And the result is going to be that you're going to have this big sweeping change, and you're going to get some Republicans in office. The economy's going to tank, and then everybody's going to go, see, we told you capitalism doesn't work. It's their fault. It's the Republicans. It was all Bush's fault. Now you let them back in, and now they've completely destroyed it. See, and people are going to believe it.
Oh, yeah.
They're going to run out and
use their EBT cards to buy their government sponsored Brondo. What plants crave?
And you know, when Obama gets reelected, Mr. Ron, Uncle Ron, the worthless degree that I worked for, you know.
Might have to eat that damn degree, Robert. It is high in fiber. And looks like we have Mike on the line.
I know you hate people with college degrees, but be it as it may.
No, I really don't. Only the Jewish
ones. Sounds like it. I know you hate Jews, too. that's your problem.
There it is.
But be it as it may, I would be one of the guys applying for a disability if Obama gets reelected and have a good time on the government. Really, that's how I feel. By rights, I should, because I had 2 strokes, number one, and I have cluster headaches, number two, and number three,
strokes?
I don't know how much.
How many strokes is par? Sorry.
You risk the one, that's the truth. So I don't know how much time I have left. And if Obama does get reelected, I want to abuse the system, just like everybody else does.
I understand what you're saying, and I know that you don't really mean that, but I get it. You know, I get it. And there's a lot of people that feel that way. Atlas is shrugging. There's a lot of people who are just saying the hell with it. I'm just, why do I continue to go to work only to have 56% of what I earn robbed from me to be given to ungrateful snobs? I get that.
I pay taxes every goddamn year. Excuse me. I'll probably get kicked off the show for that. But
I'm not
going to
kick you
off
the show. You know that. But I do have Mike on the line, and I want to give him a chance to chime in. So, Mike, go ahead, sir. The floor
yes,
is yours.
Yes, sir. All right. How you doing tonight?
Doing good, man. Doing good.
All right. It's basically a question. Now that Paul Ryan is in the mix, Mr. Medicare reformer, here's what I'm perplexed about. Okay, one, we know that the Democrats and the Soros administration are going to take out between $500 billion and $720 billion out of Medicare, implant it into Medicaid through Obamacare. Okay, we have that established. Then we have the Romney-Ryan team saying that folks 55 and older won't be affected, yet 55 and under, there are going to be changes made. Do you know specifically what those changes are? And then I got a follow-up question after that.
I don't know if anyone does. I know there was some talk about offering some other opt-outs.
But do we know specifically?
No, I don't think anyone knows specifics at this point.
Right.
And we saw what happened when, GW tried to mention a 4% savings account instead of contributing to Social Security, and he got crucified for it.
Here's what scares me. So Romney and Ryan are expecting us to vote for them without knowing what they're going to do to Medicare. Then explain to me, what is the difference then what Nancy Pelosi said when she said, well, we have to approve Obamacare to find out what's in it. Why is it different?
Well, it's not different. I don't see a damn bit of difference.
Secondly, I don't mean to interrupt, but I just want to get this in because I don't know how much time we have left. But also, do you notice how Romney and Ryan aren't saying bupkis about cutting Medicaid. Hey, you know, at least young people can go out and shovel dirt. What the hell can old people do? And instead of paying for birth control, how about this? You can't afford a kid? Cross your damn legs.
Amen.
Oh, my goodness. Right. No one is about cutting, talking about messing with Medicare. What the hell are old people supposed to do? And I think both parties, and not only that, this, the DREAM Act takes effect, and I'll be talking about that in depth this Friday night on my show, Phase 1 of it. And Americans aren't going to like it.
Well, you know, Michael, you bring up a fantastic point about the Medicare and Medicaid issue under Obamacare and the Ryan plan, and that's something that actually Congressman Paul touched on recently in an interview when they were asking him about the Ryan plan and what he had thought of it initially and what he thinks of it now that he's had more time to study it. And he said, well, you know, quite earnestly and with all integrity, he is the only one, Ron Paul, that put forth an actual comprehensive plan to balance the damned budget. And in his plan, he completely leaves Medicare and Medicaid untouched because he feels that even though those programs are unconstitutional, we still have a moral obligation to those seniors that are trapped in that system, and we can't just pull the rug out from under them. However, the Ryan budget plan does, in fact, go into Medicare and start pulling away at Medicare benefits. And I would posit that, number one, Mr. Romney knows full well what's in Obamacare. And
he wrote
the Romney was the one that drafted the legislation that they used as the basis for this damn Obamacare crap. And let's not forget, let's look, as I reiterated earlier, all of the various spending programs and expansions of your federal government that Mr. Ryan has been in favor of over the years, like the NDAA and the TARP and the $915 billion 2012 Omnibus Spending Act, because they can't seem to get their budgetary crap together. All right? So here's what I think, and this is just my own humble opinion, albeit I say humble tongue-in-cheek. The plan all along from the very beginning is to have a damn single-payer system. And the vouchers that Doc is talking about that Ryan wants to put forth for those people that are 55 and younger, and they'll give you, the government will give you a voucher. I think what that is simply a way to shut up the conservative base, the Republican base, by giving them a voucher wherewith they can pay their fine. Okay, for not having health care coverage under Obamacare. And they'll be in the single-payer system, which is government-provided health care. Because you're not going to be able to afford an individual health care plan with what you get in that friggin' voucher. I'll guarantee it.
So, in other words, so we'll be on nationalized medicine like Europe.
You
and then,
betcha.
Right, and then when we need when we need a specialist, we'll have a 4 to 6 month wait and drop dead in our living rooms.
Exactly.
Sure. Right.
And God forbid, you're over 55 and need a specialist.
Me too.
The specialist you're going to get is end of life counseling.
Right. And not only that, I would like to know how anyone thinks, all these libtards out here, I want to know how they think that the doctors, if 85% of the one polls don't quit, I want to see. Yeah, it's liberals, libtards. I want to see how they. I want to see how doctors are going to meet the demand when all these people are in flux. It's not going to happen.
Mike.
Well, of course it's not going to happen, and especially when they start. I mean, they've already been dictating through Medicare and other government programs how much a damn physician can earn.
Yeah, so who wants to go to medical school for 6 years and make 50 grand? I don't think so.
Exactly.
Mike, they're already the docs are already quitting at my age. Okay, they're retired. I'm 56. I'll be 57 in October. They're already quit. They're already retiring.
Mm-hmm.
They've had enough. So, you know, with Medicare and Medicaid, you know, Obama promised tort reform. Did he give us that? No.
Just like campaign reform. That old malarkey with campaign reform. Right.
But be it as it may, doctors are not going to be accepting Medicaid patients. You know, they're not going to take them. You know, and that's the bottom line. And in Washington D.C. knows that. You know, the doctors in my area are not going to accept Medicaid patients. Okay, the reason why Medicare is under the brink, Mr. Mike, is because I said this all along. And I'll say it again. It's because these 2020 rich, bastards that are on Medicare know how to abuse the system, number one, and they take advantage of it, and that's fraud. They commit fraud.
I understand that. But here's the problem, though. Why aren't both parties talking? Well, we know the libtards won't. But why isn't the Republican Party talking about drastic cuts to Medicaid? Why are they messing with older people and me, who's 47, that now has a big question mark on my forehead? Why aren't we talk about fraud? I'm sure there's a hell of a lot more fraud with Medicaid than there is with Medicare. And young people could go out six digits and close their legs.
I'll answer that question for you.
Sure.
And the answer to that question is this. When Ronald Reagan passed the Disabilities Act, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, people in wheelchairs, people who have cerebral palsy, people who cannot move, or, you know, spinal cord injuries, brain injuries. That's the field I wanted to get into so I could help these people. You know, be it as it may, when Ronald Reagan passed the Disabilities Act, that's why they created Medicaid, so the people with disabilities who could not move or have no limbs, you know, couldn't apply for Medicaid and get the Medicaid service. That's where the collapse started.
That's where it all started.
I've been a healthcare advocate since 1994,
and I've been
fighting this socialized medicine since I came into this town. So, you know, I know my stuff, and I know what's what. And the bottom line is, people are abusing the system, and I'll give you examples. And the examples are people who are high functioning people that, you know, they're depressed, they're this, they're that, you know, and they can't work. Well, get on disability, okay? And once they're on disability, they get a part-time side under the cash table job, go back to work, collect two incomes, and we're paying their damn taxes.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, period. Absolutely. Robert, I can tell you precisely, I met one of those people you're talking about when I was down in Florida. The guy's my age, right? And he's working on the beach in front of a bar, setting up, you know, you want to rent a chair? No problem. He'll run over and put your cushion on the chair and put an umbrella up for you. And I asked him, I said, man, that's a pretty sweet gig, you know, working out at the beach, get to check out all the ladies, you know. Hey, so I'm on disability. I just work for cash. I said, disability? What's wrong? I've got chronic fatigue syndrome. I'm like, that's called lazy ass syndrome, okay?
Well, that's the part of the course. It's like your two-part joke.
Well, not, sorry, Rod. But the thing with Medicaid is that you don't even have to be sick to get it. Here in the unconstitutional blue state of Connecticut, you just have to make less than $800 a month. You either get Medicaid or you get Husky. So it's not even Medicaid isn't even for sick people anymore.
No,
It's for anybody.
Exactly.
Where's Ryan and Romney saying we're going to make drastic cuts to Medicaid and only give it to people that are truthfully disabled? I don't hear any of that chatter. All I hear is change to Medicare. Screw the old people and people like me that's 47 and, you know, on their way to becoming a senior. Screw us, but don't do anything about Medicaid. People popping out kids, people coming up with back injuries, and these programs are going to be expanded.
Oh, yeah.
So again, it's both parties selling out the American people.
Sure.
But it's the American voters' fault.
Well, I agree.
The American voter dropped the ball again. We had a guy, you mentioned him before, Ron Paul. He was the guy. We should have stood behind him. I've been screaming Ron Paul since 2007.
Yep. I'm with you, brother.
Kook, right? He's a kook. He's crazy. Crazy because he wants to follow the Constitution and because he wants to get out of that 64-year circle jerk known as the Middle East Theater. Oh, that's right. Yeah, he's a lunatic. Right. No, let's go with Obama. Let's go with Romney. Sure. Great. I got a website. I'm going to stick it. Stick it this Friday night into Romney's butt. The real Willard Romney from point A to point Z. And this is what people have to look forward to should he win. It's a lose-lose for America. No doubt about
sure.
it.
Oh, absolutely. Look, we've been, you know, and I've said this, Ron Paul was the first opportunity that I'm aware of in my lifetime to elect a real leader.
Yep.
Okay? Right. Because, as I've said before, guys, we have been voting for 230-plus years. And we haven't gotten a lot for our money. We've gotten sold out, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I agree with Mike Church, and you guys have heard me say it on this program many times. Before the ink was dry on the damned document, they set about debasing it. They set about bastardizing it through mm-hmm. Hamilton.
Yeah,
and it was the Hamiltonian ideology. British mercantilism is what he wanted. And under Abraham Lincoln, they were able to get it. And we have not had a constitutional republic since Abraham Lincoln was in office in this country. And Ron Paul was the only time that I'm aware of in the history of this country since Abraham Lincoln was in office that we have had an honest opportunity to go back to what we had prior to Lincoln. And the American people are so damned ignorant of the truth and reality that they buy all the media talking points and they vilify Ron Paul. And, you know, I used to engage people a little bit in the argument because inevitably, whether they were a liberal progressive or whether they were a constitutional patriot, they all came up with the exact same reason they didn't like Ron Paul. Well, I really don't like his foreign policy.
Hmm.
And you know what? My response is, really, because, you know, I guess our current foreign policy has been working so damned well, right, that we ought not to monkey with it because look how well it's working.
Five more American soldiers killed over the weekend due to our so-called Afghan allies. We ought to just make that joint into a freaking parking lot. That's what we ought to do.
Yep.
You know, Mike, what I cannot understand about the American people that are in the Tea Party and all these patriots out there, right? Mm. We've got millions and millions of patriots. Okay? None of them seem to grasp the reality that our military policy, our militarism, is a direct result of the progressive ideology that comes from the United Nations. And since the formation of the United Nations in 1945, this country has not fought any conflict that was anything other than politically motivated.
Yeah, and we have paper tiger Tea Party leaders, Michelle Bachmann, Sarah Palin. Why weren't they backing Ron Paul? Because they're fake. They're fake, phony,
yep,
paper tigers. They've got no legitimacy, and they're punks. And this Tea Party is just a bunch of crap.
It was co-opted, and people don't believe that, okay? But the very first Tea Party meeting or rally they had here in Atlanta, Georgia, me and a couple of my buds went down there, and the minute we walked up, there's a big screen TV in the middle of the crowd, Sean Hannity. I said, yep, this is bought and paid for, guys.
Mm.
This is not grassroots, okay? This is not the Tea Party that started under Congressman Ron Paul. This is the Republican wing of the two-party snake, okay?
Mm.
The two-headed snake of the mosquito class in Washington, D.C., and they've co-opted these people who are furious over all this crap, the bailouts and everything else that's going on. And, you know, I remember back, and I know, Mike, I guarantee you saw it. If you were involved during Dr. Paul's campaign in 2007, when Sean Hannity was on and he kept denying that the economy was in trouble. It's just a speed bump. It's just a little bump in the road. And Dr. Paul is trying to sound the alarm. It's the economy, stupid.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the housing bubble hadn't popped yet. And all the pundits and talking heads, he's just crazy. And then, boom, it happens. And we have this tailspin in our economy, and still people don't recognize that he's
telling the recovery.
Truth.
No, it's a recovery. This is going to slow down the recovery. What recovery? There has never been a recovery. There's never been a recovery. Where have we shown any signs of recovery since the crash of 2008? There hasn't been. And I've said it from the onset, way before I got on radio, that it's like a horse race. We're not even at the far turn yet of this collapse.
No.
It hasn't even truly started yet.
Well, I agree. And let me tell you something. We talk about, 2000. But if we're looking at monetary policy and monetary history in this country, let's go back a little further, because everyone, we've all heard of the Great Depression and how World War II ended the Great Depression, which is in and of itself, that's a fallacy. But it did, World War II did allow something to happen that the historians and the economists don't talk about. What happened after World War II was the Federal Reserve Bank was allowed to expand its balance sheets par excellence by loaning debt, U.S. taxpayer debt, to the nations of Germany, Japan, Great Britain, Italy, France, Spain, Greece, Portugal, the Middle East, in an effort to rebuild what was demolished and destroyed during that war. And guess what, boys and girls? That debt never went away. What we did was we took the United States Federal Reserve banking system and we put it out global. And now you wonder why all these problems are occurring in Greece and Germany and the European Union. I mean, they were talking European Union back in the 40s, right after the war.
Mm.
So all we did was take U.S. debt and get everyone in bed with the Federal Reserve Bank.
So in other words, it's basically the opposite of Obama. Obama wants to spread the wealth, but before we did that, we spread the debt.
Right, but we called it wealth, you see.
Uh-huh.
Because in this country and in the banking system, in our system, debt is money. It's wealth. And that's the problem that we have financially. That's the problem that is going on globally right now in the financial sector. When you have a command structure economy that has, completely planned and controlled, and you're using a fiat debt-based currency, there comes a point when you've printed so much money that the system reaches critical mass.
And where we are now.
Right. Where you end up in a situation where you have more money in existence than there is goods, products, and services to be purchased. And we have eclipsed that by a factor of, 10 to the square root of 4, for God's sakes.
Mm. Now, Doc has popped in a question in the chat room. Unfortunately, Ron Paul is past history and not an option. What do we do now? Well, here's a suggestion. First off, thanks to the Electoral College and me living in the blue libtard state of Connecticut, my vote is not going to count. It's going to all go to Obama. So it's really a double-edged sword, because since my vote won't count, it'll go to Obama anyway, I get to vote my conscience and I get to vote third party. So I'll be voting for Gary Johnson. Now, of course, I can't give that advice to the battleground and the red states, because, the lesser of two evils syndrome. So certainly those of us that are stuck in blue states, we can vote our conscience. And we can vote a third party all the way down the line. I mean, I guess it's all we can do, because, this is how we're pigeonholed. Because I don't know what's worse. Another 4 years of Obama, or you get Romney and whatever he's going to do with Ryan, and if these guys are hideous, Obama can always come back in 2016. Or you get Madam Hillary, who's just no one says it, but she is just as maniacal as Obama.
Oh,
she comes from the same
up evil.
She comes, her and Slick Willie come from the same ilk. And there's another thing that nobody talks about, how we've got to where we are and why China owns everything. And you can thank Slick Willie himself for signing NAFTA and the free trade agreements with China and Brazil. Nobody talks about it. No one talks about repealing NAFTA and bringing our jobs home. And that's why this whole election is a farce.
You're right. And the other thing nobody talks about is it was a damned Republican Congress and Senate that passed that crap, led by the choir boy himself, Newt the Snake Freaking Gingrich.
Thank you. Oh, I got kicked out of another show, conservative radio, for slamming Newt. They didn't like that. They kicked me out of the room.
And I know you and I, we kind of had a small exchange the last time you were on, over the term conservative, but
right.
I want to place my foundation down, okay? As when I use the word conservative, if you look up the definition of the word conservative, you're going to find four definitions or four meanings. The meaning that I use is meaning number one, tending to lean towards the original principles, the founding documents, okay? The original idea. Mm-hmm. Not number four, which is tending to want to promote the status quo or keep things as they are, which is the way that it's used in the mainstream media these days for the mosquito class.
You see, when we were talking about that, and I popped in a link into the chat room, and I really recommend everybody read it. Don't worry about the Rick Santormas in there, but it's Tom Mullen. I put in there, it shows the conservative movement as it is now from Hamilton versus libertarianism, the John Adams side. So this is why I dumped the conservative moniker, because now when I think of conservative, all I see is the face of Alexander Hamilton in front of me, and I see Bonehead, Boehner and, you know, all the rest of the clowns. So I guess that's why we got into a little thing. As soon as I see conservative, I see, like, no, I don't want to know you because that's not the founding fathers. But I get what you are saying. I get your rendition. Of. I guess you're more like you're an independent conservative. Like I'm an independent libertarian. Okay.
Yeah.
You want to hear what Uncle Ron?
Go ahead, Mr.
Roberts. You want to hear my definition of conservatism?
Sure.
Ronald Reagan. My definition. My definition of conservatism is I have a little White House on 1311 Cypress Avenue, Venice, Florida. Okay, I bought it. It's mine. Mama didn't help me buy it. I bought it. I kept it afloat. I paid my taxes on my home on time. I paid my bills on time. I paid my insurances on time. I owe no debt to no one. I'm debt-free. I balance my budget in my home. Why can't they do it in Washington? The hell with them.
Well, they can't because they're addicted to spending your money, Robert.
Don't borrow money from China anymore.
Well, I want to address that. I want to address that, and I'm going to here in just a second. But I want to give everyone a thought. Okay, I want you to keep this in your mind every time you hear the lamestream media say the word conservative. I want you to look at the individual they're talking about and ask this question. What are they trying to conserve?
Not a damn thing.
Nothing.
The status quo.
Right, that, yes.
Yep.
Okay.
Now,
hang on, Robert, because I want to address this issue with China, because this is something that is near and dear to my heart, and it's one of those things where we talk about China buying our debt. And, you know, Doc put on, as long as someone will buy the debt, quote, China, it's not a problem.
Mm.
And that is a dangerous thought process to enter into. And I'll tell you why. Japan is the perfect example. Japan is running a deficit that is roughly 500% of their gross domestic product.
Good grief.
The way that Japan has been able to get away with doing that is how they are spending that deficit. They spend it on infrastructure, on industry within their country. They spend it on job growth and creation and keeping their export business going. The United States is spending it on handouts to those people whose jobs have been outsourced to China and other third world countries. How does China spend that money? I know you all have seen the stories of the giant ghost cities being built in China. That's how China spends your tax dollars. Okay? And if you go back to Mr. Conservative Ronald Reagan, 1981, I gave you guys the dates previously, he put in front of Congress the recommendation to pass the United Nations Industrial Development Organization Charter to the United Nations, which specifically means that we are going to pay to outsource our manufacturing and industrial base to third world countries so that everyone can be in on the game. Which is why we had to have NAFTA, CAFTA, GATT, and all these other damned programs. Okay?
That's why George Bush Sr. said, quote, the future is in China, period, close quote. Before he got elected, he said that. When I was in Miami listening to that on the History Channel.
Hillary Clinton, anyone that would listen, that China is the model. Boys and girls, yeah. Pay attention.
Well, this is why, you know, Obama signed off last week, August 1st, that now under Obamacare, starting in 2014, women and teenage girls get to voluntarily sterilize themselves, and we're going to fit the bill.
Yep.
Same thing they do in China. And then you know what's going to come next? You know what's going to come next? They're going to say, you know, this country's
child
too broke.
Policy.
You can't, right, that, yes. That'll
really?
Be next.
I mean, let's be honest here for a moment. They are delivering on their promise of transparency because you can see right through this bullshit.
All right. And Obama kept his promise. He was going to transform America in 4 years.
Fundamentally.
Yeah. Slam dunk. He did it. Mission accomplished. He's probably the first president that I've ever seen that actually upheld his agenda. He did it.
Right.
Yep.
And was honest about it up front. We just,
absolutely.
You know,
that's the whole thing.
Too many people just didn't know. They didn't understand.
Well, but here's the thing, right? 70% of this country is against Obamacare, but they voted for the guy, and he didn't hide it. He said this was coming. He said, this is what I'm going to do. So how could 70% of the country be against it, but the country put him in? This is how pathetic the American voter is.
That's the entitlement people, Mike.
Not just them. It's also the white liberal too.
Correct.
It's also the white liberal too. That
it's
has to
the
set
Janine
everybody.
Garofalo
look,
crowd,
I,
you know.
I'm not prejudiced. I voted for a black man. Look at me. Hi, not prejudiced. Okay.
God.
Well, good.
And we've been growing this ideology in this country for decades. Okay, the first nose under the camel's nose under the tent, so to speak, was Social Security.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
the next step was Lyndon Johnson's Great Society, and the step that followed right on the heels of that was Richard Milhouse Nixon and the managed care, HMOs and PPOs under the Kaiser plan.
You know what's so ironic? The leaders of the liberal movement, from Obama on down, they all live like capitalists. You notice that?
Oh, well,
big
look.
Big SUVs, mansions, golfing, vacations. They live like capitalists, but they want us to live in the dark. And the people
Mike,
vote for them. It's
Mike,
retarded.
I'm telling you. They see themselves, I honestly believe this, they see themselves as philosopher kings.
Mm-hmm.
Right out of Plato's Republic. They believe themselves to be the cream of the crop that has risen to the top, that has been set aside for the special purpose of leading the dumb masses because we're too frickin' ignorant to know what's good for us. They
that's
do
correct.
It out of benevolence. I'm telling you, they honestly believe it. Not all of them, but some, like Pelosi.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Do you really think that they believe their own? Do you really think they believe that? Or do they know that?
When the
camera goes to black, they're laughing at us.
No, I guarantee you Pelosi is absolutely convinced of it. I can read it in her. Every time I see that woman, the arrogance just oozes out of her. And if you know, I've read a lot in the occult, the mystery religions, and their philosophy, the ideology, and this is exactly what they believe. They believe that they are doing this for your own good, for your benefit, and you're just too damned ignorant and insolent, Mike, to accept the fact that you're just not as smart as they are.
Oh, okay. So it's my benefit that I'm jobless, can't get a doctor, can't get a specialist.
But Mike, look at all the programs we've put in place that you can qualify for so that we can take care of you.
I doubt I qualify for anything.
But we did this for you, Mike.
Oh.
Why are you so bitter?
And you know what, Stan?
That's exactly the condescending frickin' attitude that oozes from that witch.
And you know what's sad? Is that all the other dictators, all the other fascists and the Marxists, they all had to take over by revolution and murder. This country, though, the Marxists moved in, not by a coup d'etat, not by a military takeover. We handed them the keys.
Well,
here
now,
you go. Do the vote. Here, take it. It's all
yours. But wait a minute. See, I'm going to back you on that. I'm gonna put you back on that for just a second.
Sure.
Because I've got a theory, okay? And my theory is that the mosquito class, the real mosquito class, the one world order folks,
mm-hmm.
They believed Marx was correct. They believed Marx's philosophy that we had to have chaos in order to create the revolution is correct. And that chaos was delivered via World War I and World War II. And at
sure.
the end of World War II, at the end of World War I, you had the League of Nations, but guess what? The people weren't falling for it,
nope.
And it fell apart. And they said, hey, no problem. We got Wilson in here. We got Colonel House, and we've got these progressive nut jobs over here, and they're going to push their 14 points. Sounds like 14 points of light. I think I heard that somewhere before, too. So they go over to the Paris peace talks. And wouldn't you know, in the Treaty of Versailles, they adopt almost all 14 points of Wilson's plan. And what comes out of it is crushing economic sanctions on Germany.
Yeah. And that
gives
gave
rise
Hitler
to Hitler,
yep.
Mussolini, and World War II. And
mm-hmm.
guess what? After World War II, the folks of the world, but predominantly the people in the United States, they'd had enough of war, and they were willing to embrace a world charter, the United Nations. And the main charter of the United Nations is universal disarmament, universal peace through universal disarmament. And when they say universal disarmament, what people in this country ought to know is what they mean is that the only people that will be allowed to have any kind of arms are the peacekeeping forces and the law enforcement forces within the country.
Hence,
so your Second
hence
Amendment,
the UN
you can
arms
forget
treaty.
It.
Right,
yes,
hence
sir.
The UN arms treaty, which they've cleverly delayed it till after the election. Cleverly.
So I would posit that what we have seen unfold from the 1800s, okay, let us not forget that Karl Marx wrote and congratulated Abraham Lincoln on being elected to his second term. I see all of this ties together. It's one step after another. The
mm-hmm.
first step in this country was Lincoln eviscerating the Constitution and setting up a new union under the federal government, which is now the national government.
Right.
And the 14th Amendment, which brings into the fold all the several states. They are no longer separate. It's one entity known as the United States.
Yep.
Hmm.
Well, you know, that theory that you have, and you could be right with that idiot Pelosi, she does swallow that stuff that she's been, you know, brainwashed with, that she's elevated above us and that we're too stupid. And that she actually does believe her little benevolent, you know, speeches and ideologies. But I think Mike's right in some instances that there are those out there that when that camera goes dark, they're laughing at us, and they are pure evil. They
oh, sure.
do not give a rat's behind about benevolence at all.
But I'm telling you,
you know,
that it's the reason they're laughing, okay? They're laughing because they realize that we are just as dumb as they think we are.
No, because we keep reelecting them. And here
exactly.
you have, speaking of Pelosi, you have California going bankrupt. Stockton doesn't even have any money to buy gas for the cops and firemen. And they keep getting reelected. Nevada in the toilet and Harry Reid over and over again. I mean, what is this?
But see, now, Mike, and there again, this is another one of those things. See, we talk about California being bankrupt, and that's complete fabrication. Okay? Oh. Yeah, absolutely. Linda knows why. I've shown it before. Have you ever heard of an institution called CalPERS?
No.
Okay, CalPERS is
it, we're, I know
we're
what
going
it is.
Yeah, we're going to go in the archives. No big deal. CalPERS is an institutional investment vehicle. That is, by the way, an offshore corporation. Because state and federal law dictated that in the state of California, no government entity could own more than 5% interest in any corporation. So they just took CalPERS, which is California's retirement program investment vehicle. They moved it offshore to, you know, I don't know, Singapore or the damn Bahamas, and they start up this company. So all the municipalities and government entities in the state of California, they send their funds that they collect for investing in, you know, retirement pension programs and whatnot. They send it all to this offshore company.
Mm-hmm.
And that offshore company then in turn buys stock in these corporations. Collectively, the government in California, not just state but local municipalities, owns 95% of all the electrical production in the state. They have collectively, in liquid investment, over $6 trillion.
Is that why their electricity is so high? Is that why their utilities are so
think
high?
About it. Think about the irony in this, okay? The power company that's owned collectively by the government in the state has to come to the state on bended knee to ask for rate increases. And who are the major stockholders? The frickin' municipalities in this state. What do you think the odds are they're going to get a rate increase? Who benefits?
Such a mess.
Okay, follow the dang money. And the problem with all this money that's sitting in these investment accounts is it's all off budget. And all of it is structured so that not 1 cent of that money can be redirected into the general fund. They've got enough money to fund their pension retirement accounts for the next 100 flipping years without collecting another cent in revenue, but they're bankrupt. They're broke. It's all for show, guys.
Yep.
Just like we are.
I would encourage you to look up a guy. His name's Walter Burian, CAFR1.com. Every government entity in the entire United States has to, by law, once a year, issue a comprehensive annual financial report. And within that report, you will find all the off-budget items and all the money they have in liquid capital investments. We're not talking buildings and cars and, you know, trucks and equipment. We're talking liquid capital.
Wow.
The people of California are broke
because
they can't afford to keep paying for all these government services they're told they have to buy.
Right.
But the government itself, the government employees and all those, they're not broke because their pension is secure and as good as gold.
No, I guess that's how Pelosi keeps getting reelected then, I guess, huh?
Absolutely.
Municipalities, the unions, the cops, all those good folks.
Yeah, because they don't want to take the chance of losing their little nest egg that they've got set aside. And the crazy thing is, when you look at these pension plans, okay, you got, let's say, just for the sake of argument, you got a pension fund over here and there's $1 billion in it. And you say, yeah, but gosh, Lee, you know, look, they've got 100,000 employees. Okay. And of that 100,000 employees, you've got 50 or 100 that are getting ready to go on retirement.
Mm-hmm.
And when they go on retirement, it's like going to the train station and buying a ticket to ride the train from L.A. to Big Sur. Okay. So they get their ticket to ride, and they get, you know, $1,000 a week. And somewhere on the train ride, they might drop dead. And now they no longer get that $1,000 a week. Meanwhile, you got $1 billion in this fund, and the percentage that's being paid out versus what's in the fund is minuscule.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're not even talking a full percentage point.
Wow.
Well, you know, Rob, supposedly that's Obama's quote. You know how he has created saved jobs through that. That's where they get their numbers.
Look, the numbers are so damn. The numbers are so flippin' skewed and twisted. When we look at the CPI, the Consumer Price Index, they're not allowed to include energy costs or housing costs
or food.
What are your two biggest expenditures if you're a homeowner and you have a job and you go to work every day?
Your mortgage and your fuel.
No shit. but those aren't included in the CPI, guys.
No.
I mean, that's just a bald-faced horseshit number.
And I just want to, you know, I have a thought here. You know, how you said about how I say Pelosi keeps getting reelected, and you say, yeah, because they don't want to lose their nest egg. Well, you see, this is what scares me about this election. Obama has 50% of the country on entitlements and not paying federal income tax. He has them in their back pockets already without uttering a single word. Because they're not going to want to lose their stuff.
You're right.
And then the Republican Party comes up with the gopper flip-flopper, making this election even weaker. Why wouldn't Obama be reelected? I think he won't be.
I think he's got a damn good shot at it. I'm going to tell you something, and you know, this is something that I went through a while back, and it's worse than you think. Okay? Because there's another number out there. I understand 47% of the population is on some form of government assistance, but there's another number that no one's talking about.
What's that?
Okay? And that number is the number of net tax payers versus net tax consumers. We've been conditioned to always think about gross income, gross taxes, gross domestic product. But we never talk about the real number that really matters, and that is net. And what I mean by that is you got 47% of the population pays no income tax. Now, that leaves you 53% of the population that does pay some income tax.
Mm-hmm.
Out of that 53%, how many do you think work for government, whether it's state, local, federal, municipal?
At this point?
Probably 27%.
I would say 4 out of 10.
Okay. So, if you're a government employee, say you work for the state of Georgia, are you a net taxpayer?
I would say no. I'm in the negative.
Exactly. Because even though you're paying income taxes, even though you're included in that 53%, every cent that you earn and every cent that you pay in is derived from the pool below you that are net taxpayers.
And under the Dream Act, Obama is going to hire social workers or whatever they're going to be called to track fraud.
Are we beginning to see that number dwindle, that 47% number grow?
Absolutely. And then they're going to hire between 4,000 and 5,000 new IRS agents to audit every small business in the country come 2014 to see either that they can afford health care, you know, keeping Obamacare for their employees, or being taxed a penalty. Taxed, mind you, prorated to their intake, and they're going to include their personal assets, like their value of their homes.
Yep. And guess what, boys?
People don't think about that and don't know that.
Guess what, boys and girls? You've just discovered or realized why the libtards always talk about taxing the top 10%. Because the top 10% is damn near all there is at the end of the day.
Yep.
But that's like a balanced budget anyhow. So it does, you know,
it's not intended to, Robert. It's not intended to.
No.
You're buying the distraction if you're listening to that balanced budget bullshit. And if you've been listening to my program for any length of time, you know that back early on when I was going through all the monetary issues, okay, the moment you hear the word budget, understand that everything you hear after it is smoke being blown straight up your ass.
Out.
Because
why do you think I have Leonie over here?
Budgets are nothing. Smoke and mirror political tool.
Well, here's something else. Here's more smoke going up her butt. Paul Ryan today, he's expounding Mitt Romney. And as governor, Mitt Romney balanced the budget and never raised a single tax, which is a bold-faced lie. Created more fees and increased more fees than anyone has ever seen before. And it's all semantics. Fees, anything you pay to the government is a tax. I don't care what you call it. It's a tax. He taxed nursing homes. He taxed the blind. He taxed people with tuberculosis. He taxed the military. He upped the fees on gun licenses, driving licenses, child care centers, nursing homes. This guy is the ultimate tax man, and he created Obamacare. The bold-faced lies.
You absolutely validate my theory, and I think starting tonight, I'm no longer going to call it the budget smoke and mirror up your butt theory. It's going to be the budget smoke it blown straight up your butt law. Because every time you hear, I'm telling you, every time you hear that word budget, they're going to lie to you. Everything that comes after, it's going to be a bold-faced lie. Because they know that you don't know what they're talking about. Look, the budget, when Clinton balanced the budget, right? And we had a budget surplus. Okay? Here's the deal. You have a budget of $1,000 a month in your household. And your wife gets a second job, and she's making $1,000 a month. So now you're taking in $2,000 a month, but you're still only spending $1,000. Well, you have a budget surplus. The problem is that your checking account is overdrawn $100,000. And so the reason she got that extra job was to try and pay down your debt. But you have a budget surplus. So, hell, honey, let's go bowling. I'm going to take you out for dinner and a movie. We got a surplus. We've balanced our budget, and we've got extra money.
Got it.
That's,
and if they want to balance the budget, you know all they got to do to balance the budget? Is appropriate an amount higher than what they actually spend. We got a $1.6 trillion deficit. No problem. We're going to sit down, hammer out a new budget, and we're going to have an increase in our budgetary allowance of $3 trillion. Look, shit, we balanced the budget.
And, of course, we have fun with raising the debt ceiling. No big deal.
Right. So, I mean, you can balance the budget with the stroke of a frickin' pen by appropriating more money. And then just don't spend it all. Just spend most of it. But it has no bearing on cutting spending and government programs and stopping the damn arterial gusher.
Yep.
It's smoking.
Ron,
yes, sir.
Why do you think I help Leona take care of Kathy? Poor girl doesn't have a life. That's a 24/7 case. It's a state case. she has cerebral palsy, you know? It's 24/7. Yeah, I took them into my home because they both don't have a life. They didn't have a life.
And it ended up being a good thing.
Robert, did your dog swallow the phone?
Yes, I can't hear.
No.
Like not audible.
That's a little better.
Every time I talk on my left ear, for some reason, I don't know why that happens.
Well, look, guys.
Did we run out of time?
We've been in the archives for a little while, but. I really appreciate everybody, you know, tuning in tonight, and I appreciate you guys all calling in. Mike, love to have you back on the show anytime.
Absolutely. So what do you want mostly, Tuesday nights like this?
Monday nights.
I'm sorry, this is my – I wish it was Tuesday. Never mind.
That's all right. Monday nights I do this program, which is the Constitution Hour. On Sundays I do Fed Up Frank, and I've really been – focusing on the Bible on Sundays.
Okay. And, what time are you on Sundays?
7 o'clock.
Okay.
And my focus has been on preterism, and it may not be a term that you're familiar with.
No.
Basically, in Christians, in the Christian school of thought, there's two groups, futurists and preterists.
Mm.
Preterist is simply derived from Latin meaning past.
Okay.
And futurist obviously means the future.
Yep.
Most Christians believe that we're still waiting on Christ to return at some time in the future and save
mm-hmm.
us all.
Mm-hmm.
The preterists say, no, you guys, I think you got it wrong. If you go back and read your Bible, I think what you're going to see is that all of that stuff that you think you're waiting on happened a long time ago. Basically, the preterist view is that everything that is contained in the Bible from the front page to the last page has already happened. It's already been fulfilled.
Well, where's the 1,000 years of paradise?
Well,
on Earth?
I mean, you know, again, this
where'd
this
that
is
go?
I don't believe that there was 1,000 years of paradise mentioned in the Bible.
I thought it was in Revelation.
Well, hold on. What is mentioned in Revelation is the millennial reign of Christ, which is 1,000-year reign.
Yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. And what is spoken of that speaks of that God will wipe every tear, every eye will be dry, and there'll be peace and love, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if we read that in a literal sense, that's going to be on the physical earth, okay? Mm-hmm. And it says that there'll be no more death and no more mourning.
Mm-hmm.
Then we believe that we're going to live in our physical bodies just like we are right now, out making babies and doing all the things we do now, but we're never going to die for 1,000 years.
Mm-hmm.
I would suggest to you that in the tradition of the Old Testament, what the writer is trying to convey to you is that the promise of eternal life after the physical body has died away, has been fulfilled, and that Christ is going to, through the Spirit, through the Holy Spirit, is going to indwell each of us. And so the new temple, is Christ. And Christ in us, each of us, spiritually, we are the new Jerusalem. The new Israel, reborn. And we no longer have to fear the physical death because we know that we have been chosen by God, with the indwelling of the Spirit of Christ himself within us, the Holy Spirit, mm-hmm. that when this body dies, there is no waiting. There's no waiting for the end judgment. We are instantly with the Father. And so okay. our death, our physical death in this body is not cause for mourning. It's cause for celebration because God has fulfilled his promise.
Is that where the term you're going home comes in? Is that?
Absolutely. Okay. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think, you know, and it's very in depth. There's a lot of stuff to it, and I'll put you up a link if you like.
Sure.
There's a guy that does a fantastic job of explaining this far better than I can, and his name is Frank Spears.
Okay.
And the link that I'm going to put up in the chat room, it's there's 9 segments to this, and it's called Life in the New Jerusalem. And he
Got
explains
it.
Revelation quite thoroughly. And when you're done listening to that, up at the top left, there's a little black box that says back to the blog, and it'll take you back, and you can scroll through and find the other 8 segments.
Mm-hmm.
of this, where he's going through and explaining Revelation, and the beauty of it is that he's not going to some outside source, you know, he's
right.
strictly staying in the Bible, and he's explaining it to you that, you know, in the scripture, in the Old Testament, when the writers talk about the heavens and the earth passing away, everything they're speaking about is directly relating to Israel, God's chosen people, the Hebrews, the Jews.
Mm-hmm.
It's not literally the entire globe, okay? It's an allegory. It's a reference, a comparison. In Revelation, you see the nation of Israel referred to as Egypt, as Babylon, as the whore Babylon,
mm-hmm.
as Assyria, those are all mortal enemies of the Jews of the Old Testament. And so in those examples, he's telling Israel that they have become apostate. They have become the enemy of God.
Mm.
And so he uses those nations as depictions of Israel.
Interesting.
Hey, Ron.
And if you read, hold on, Robert, and if you then read the writings of Josephus Flavius, who was a Jew, who became a Roman citizen, who
yep.
was present at the destruction of the nation of Israel. Every town or nation, as they called them back then, culminating with the destruction of Jerusalem and the temple in 70 AD.
Yep.
It's difficult once you hear this and you start thinking on it, you start going, you know what? I think these guys are right. This fits and it makes sense.
I'm definitely going to check it out. So.
Yeah, yeah.
Awesome.
You know what I think, Ron?
What do you think,
you know
Mr.
What I
Robert?
Think? I think, you know, those pictures that you sent me with the Ferraris.
Yes.
I think we should rent one to go and just drive through Israel together, just you and I, and have a good time.
Go pick up some chicks, you know? Take
Ron, thanks for doing the show, and I'm going to go.
Your legs up, you know?
Guys, I'm getting hungry.
So now, Linda, you're on Wednesday night, right?
She what? Is.
Linda, you host the show Wednesday night, right?
Right
yes.
from
Yes, yeah, I'll see you there. I'll see you there on Wednesday
Fantastic,
night.
Fantastic, Mike. Awesome.
Excellent. Excellent.
Mike, and thanks for stopping in. And
hey,
Robin,
no problem. Thank you. I got quite an education tonight. I appreciate it.
Cool.
God bless you guys for tuning in, and I'm glad that I could proselytize a little bit and maybe expand the imagination and the minds. That's the whole purpose.
Talk to you guys. I'll check you out tomorrow. Take
awesome.
Care, families. Bye.
God bless.
All
right.
Thank you all very
Thanks,
much.
Guys.
Have a good night. God bless you.
God bless. Bye-bye.
Good night.
All right, Ron. God bless you, too.
We'll see you, Robert. Be good. Take care of those girls.
Yeah.
God bless.
That's a plan. I think we should go to Israel. We're in a Ferrari.
Well, like I said, but we're going to have to take a roll of duct tape so we can pull the hair off their
leg. I think you and I should go to Israel together.
We'd end up arrested, Robert.
No, we won't. I think that's a plan. I think you need a trip to Israel. I know I need a trip to Israel because I've never been. I think we need to go. I really do. That will solve the whole problem. God bless you.
All right, man. We'll see you. Bye-bye.